Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most, because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success.
I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy.
They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with
your... Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know? If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You'll just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt?
Some shit. I'm like, huh? Like hearing that, I'm like, on 6-0, who's wearing this bitch out? They got kicking the door. Poof. Kicking the door. Nigga, I seen Carl Winslow put his
That's the father.
Up.
Ain't that the father from Family Matters?
Yeah.
No way.
The dad. I swear to God, dad homie, they blew a crib. So when I seen that, man. And then
so who's piping Carl? Diddy?
Yeah, Diddy was. So when I seen that, cuz, right?
Hey, mister.
Diddy came back and he was telling me, he was like, it's nothing
you want some
more enjoyable than having a man do something for some money. I'm like, cuz, that's crazy.
I don't worry about what nobody's doing.
So all y'all that's out there on the internet that worry about what people's doing, don't wasting your time on time that you could be putting towards yourself. Positive attracts positive, negative attracts negative. I'm gonna keep on rising, you know, because I believe that I'm a hustler.
Then with the introduction to Jacob and different people, and a lot of people going to jail for money laundering and stuff like that, Puff being, and this is documented, Puff being a CI for an FBI agent. I said this years ago, that Kim and Kirk Burrows took some paperwork, they was taking some papers up to the FBI, so like when they was here in New York. They was taking paperwork up there and stuff like that. Don't know what it was, but later on found out that he was a CI.
As far as Meek Mills, Puff Daddy, whoever, none of these niggas, all you fake hard niggas, fuck you. Wait, because you can't shoot nobody anyway, and the reason why you got to talk is because you did a deal, you fucking fed. You know what I'm saying? That's why you got
to
come.
Where do you think they got to go to? From your point of view, you know what I'm saying? What is the best advice you could give them? Because I be telling them, like, my best advice is they got to do it a whole new way, a different way, like they from another planet. But coming from you, coming from the man of men right now, tell them something good.
I mean... First of all, you fucking stay away from me, Diddy Bop, motherfucker. Motherfuckers dancing all on the motherfucking stage and shit. They want your ass. Call them astronauts. So be afraid. Be very afraid.
You really ain't built for the game.
Or something.
Something like that.
Don't be trying to be famous or you gonna run into a motherfucker like that.
I want us because I know there's going to be a shift. I know there's going to be a change. I know the aliens coming.
Now, it was this documentary that claimed, which we know wasn't true.
Yeah, check this out. We don't talk about things that are nonsense. We don't even entertain nonsense, my brother. So we're not even going to even go there with all due respect. But
yo, did you hire somebody to kill Bobby?
Yeah, no. I mean, we wouldn't even get into nonsense like that.
When you see all these rappers out here with this money popping up mysteriously and they looking like good investors and all that, no, niggas on that Diddy package thing. You get what I'm saying? Oh yeah, you see niggas getting houses, niggas offering $20-30 million for your buttholes like that. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy. And I can understand most of them niggas. It, pause, no Diddy.
Yo, bro, what's
up? Come here, give me a hug, though. You lucky, though, nigga. You lucky, bro. I'm really about that. But I love you, and we're together. We're stronger together. You lucky, nigga. Come here, come to the after party and change your vibration. Yeah, change your vibration. Change your vibration. Change your vibration. Change your vibration.
On the beat, let's go.
Payback time, know your bitch ass from way back. Witness me strapped with Max. No, I don't play that. All these old rappers trying to advance. It's all over now, take it like a man.
I give a shout out to my East Coast street folks. All you other motherfuckers get your teeth broke. Try to talk about the town like we country, but you're jealous cause the next nigga's phony. If the bullshit you're speaking ever reach me, you best be reaching for your pistol when you see. I'm from the Bronx, motherfucker, I was born to box. We can shoot it from here, we can pop the clocks. It's on you, so nigga, what you wanna do? We go 101 to call on your crew. Got a crew so true that they lie for a nigga. They keep their eye on a nigga because they die for a nigga. It's so real, motherfucker, can you feel it? And it's cool to hit the train, but don't kill it. And my papa told me killers never brag a lot. I slip my Glock in my pants and let it sag a lot. I ain't a payback.
I know your bitch ass from way back. Witness me strapped with Max. No, I don't play that. All these old rappers trying to advance. It's all over now. Take it like a man.
All right, let's jump right into it. Ladies and gentlemen, here we are back again on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast for one of our favorite guests here on the show. Fan favorite, my favorite, and for a sort of an emergency topic, we'll call it, because this show, we can't always keep up with what's going on in the news. You do a great job of that with your show, Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture, which I think, is the perfect place for this sort of realm dealing with P. Diddy, right? It's a little bit, true crime. It's a little bit strange, weird music industry, symbolism, and of course, all the occult underpinnings in between. So Isaac Weishaupt, welcome back to the show. When did this all come on your radar? Because I had a show like episode 10, like really early in my show's history, where a rapper and I spoke about him getting propositioned by Suge Knight. And that was the first time I had ever heard of any homo thug activity, to use Sam Tripoli's term. And I was a little shocked because, I grew up on rap. I remember thinking, oh, these guys are like big. There's a lot of bravado. They're tough. They're all about, just maybe I had a more masculine, not that homosexuality isn't masculine, but it definitely has a sort of outwardly feminine orientation. There are masculine gays, but I think for the most part, it was very shocking and surprising to find that out. And now, now we have Lil Nas X and all these, different like outwardly, LGBTQ rappers. And now all this is coming out with P. Diddy, where he's, being called the Epstein of the rap community. So did this all come on your radar early on when you first started writing about, the strange things going on in the rap industry?
Absolutely. And thanks for having me back on your show. I know I've been on here at least once, maybe twice even. So I'm jealous of your guest list, boy. Oh, you got all the legends on here. So I'm very honored to be back on your show. So thank you. I know I'm kind of a squirrely guy to nail down to get on the show sometimes. So anyway. Yeah, so this is interesting, and people who followed me a long time probably know the story, but I'm like you. I didn't know that you grew up listening to hip-hop like that. I remember my first introduction was, I had casually listened to, Fresh Prince, DJ Zeddy Death and the Fresh Prince, and Daz FX, but things changed. My buddy brought over the Dr. Dre, the Chronic cassette tape, and we played it, and we had like a little tape stereo in my living room, and my parents were away. It was summertime. And so I was, a latchkey or whatever. So I just minded my own business. So I don't even know how old I was, maybe 12. And I remember, I remember it blew my mind. I fell in love immediately. I was like, they're saying the N-word. These are black people saying the N-word. And I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And it was like all this violence, and I'm really drawn to all this dark stuff. I'm obsessed with like violent stuff and movies, Scarface. And man, I watched Menace to Society probably 100 times when I was a kid. I mean, I just was obsessed with that gang culture, you know? And I am nothing like I don't have a hard bone in my body. Well, pause on that. I'm not a gang kind of dude. Right.
Right.
And it's just always been a real obsession for me, a fascination. And so I've listened to hip hop my whole life. I still even stay current. I'm in my 40s. So there's got to be a point here soon where people are going to make fun of me. But, you know, I stay current, and it's a really interesting time in the rap game right now with all the diss tracks going back and forth. But anyway, yeah, this, you know, on my journey of getting into conspiracy, which, you know, the name of your show, my family thinks I'm crazy. I would argue that that role is flipped or flipping of conspiracy people being the crazy ones. And I think a lot of people are more open to a lot of our ideas, given what's happened the last few years between the pandemic response and the UFO disclosure, quote unquote, and Epstein, and now Diddy with all of his Epstein-like activities.
Yeah.
And the Diddy ordeal it was on my radar immediately because, as you know, I started blogging in 2011. That's when I took all this conspiracy stuff more serious, and I kind of started going down the rabbit hole. In fact, my first book that I wrote in 2012, when I look, it's kind of cringy to me now looking at it, because I think, man, this is so basic. Who was this guy? Like, I was so new to it. And my second book was Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic, which was hip-hop focused, and I had started learning about the occult and ritual magic and symbolism. Freeman Fly, he was my red pill daddy for that kind of stuff, and he really blew my mind with all the stuff he was talking, and I saw all that in hip-hop. And so now we're in, I don't know, roughly 2014 when I write Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. And I, you know, and I've written 9 books total so far. And then around 2015 or 16, I don't remember how it happened, but I got called by SiriusXM, called me or emailed me, wanted me to come out to the studios in LA to do Rude Jude's All Out show on Shade 45. And to talk about the book Sacrifice Magic Behind the Mic. I said, oh, okay, perfect. So I go out there, and Rude Jude he's a funny dude. And we're kind of talking in the studio or whatever. He's like, all right, man, like, let's get into your thing or whatever. And then we get going, and then he immediately opens the phone lines. And this is back in, like I said, 2015 or 16. And the phone lines blew up with people calling in, telling me to kill myself and how stupid I was. And I didn't know anything about the occult. And I was making all this stuff up. And I laughed it off because I'm used to it at this point. When you're a conspiracy guy, you just get used to it. I mean, it's not fun. It's never fun, but I just was like, okay, all right. And, you know, and over the years, people have been more receptive to it. I've been laughed at many, many times. And over the years, it's kind of been redeeming to have such a different response from people now when I talk to them about this stuff.
You're on the leading edge of it for sure. I mean, that back then was so like under everyone's radar. I remember being, you know, kind of the black sheep amongst my friends, because I would point out things with like certain mainstream rappers and be like, more surface level stuff, not like the occult stuff. I would be like, you know, why are they always talking about drugs? Why are they always talking about guns? Like, you don't sell drugs. You don't have a gun. Why are you listening? You know, those are the kind of questions that I would be interested in, like maybe the more intellectual lyrics rather than the beats. And so I saw the kind of like where pop culture was going with rap very early on, and kind of made me uninterested in the art form, honestly. I never, you know, followed up with, like, after Kendrick Lamar. I think that was like the last like mainstream rapper that I was a fan of that anyone would know, you know. Now I'm kind of interested in some underground stuff, but with that response, was it, do you think it was people who were, because we're in kind of like an walking on eggshells kind of world anytime we talk about the occult, because, you know, there's certain people that get mad because they don't want to hear about the occult because it's all evil. Then there's a certain people who are like so into the occult, they're like hobbyists, that if you, you know, if you mess with their baby, they get mad at you because they think they know it. No one else knows it, right? So it's a very touchy area. Do you think it was that, or were people just unwilling to entertain the idea that rappers could have something else going on beyond that surface level of gang life?
Yeah, at the time that people were mocking me, I think people weren't receptive to the ideas about it. And it is interesting when you research all this stuff, because you can't make anyone happy. It's the, you know, and I'm an Orthodox Christian, not a good one by any means. I don't follow the rules like I'm supposed to. I'm more worried about my own salvation. I could care less about someone else's. I hope they find the right path, but like, that's not my journey. It's not my job to keep people on the straight and narrow. Like, some people believe it, some people don't. And I respect that, because I get how faith is very difficult for people to believe in, because, you know, that's the definition of the word, really. And the Christians are the most difficult audience to please. I can't be Christian enough. And then there's the occultists, who are difficult to please as well, because they are occult nerds. They're so deep into it, and they want to rake me over the coals for getting something wrong. And I'm like, yeah, but the concept remains of what we're talking about, right? Because I'm not an occultist. I read, at this point, I would consider myself an expert on some level, because I've read so much about it and written about it. But I certainly, I'm missing that component of experience that I think would be valuable, except I am not going to do that, because that's, you know, my faith says, naughty, naughty, don't do that, you know? But I don't judge people that do. I don't care. Like, go for it. There's enough people that practice it that I know it works on some level. And my whole concern is that what I believe is that you are making deals with the devil, essentially, and toying around with stuff that we don't have the discernment to understand, which ties us into Diddy. It's interesting. Back in 2015, I wrote an article. Actually, I thought of it this morning. I don't remember what. Something hit me, and because I've got this big write-up on Diddy, a deep dive into Diddy, and it's I got to record it for my podcast feed. I did Hireside Chats. We did 2 hours, and I didn't even get through near any of it. It's probably about a 4 or 5 hour show for me to go through the whole start to finish Diddy's symbolism and things like this. And we'll get through a good chunk of it today. I'll try to pull out the big hitters on it. But back in 2015, when I was more of a blogger, I wrote this article because Diddy had a perfume or a cologne called 3AM. Do you remember this?
No, but I do remember like seeing him on television and thinking like, this rapper sucks. Why is he like in all these brands? You know, why is he like this, like, you know, like he had this like weird status as like a celebrity, even though he really kind of dropped out of the public face of being a celebrity in many of the ways that you would think a rapper would be in the public face, you know.
Yeah, and I've never liked Diddy or Puff Daddy as a rapper. And I grew up on the East Coast. We were obsessed with Notorious B.I.G. And I actually ironically liked, if you force me to pick a side, I like the West Coast rap better than the East Coast rap sometimes. But like with Puff Daddy or Diddy or whatever, like I've never thought he was a good rapper at all. And right, you know, I thought Mace was always good, Big was always good, all the people that rode with, on Bad Boy, they were all good, Black Rob. But the reason he's such a figure is because of exactly what Suge Knight talked about at the BET Awards back in the 90s, about how he just insisted on getting his face out there, and now it's coming to light that he allegedly, possibly, probably was involved with a arrangement like Epstein of blackmail, sex trafficking. Right. He had hidden cameras, and now all these parties that he's been talking about for all these years, it kind of makes more sense of why people talk about going to these parties, but they refuse to say any more.
And it's telling that his first like major connection in the industry was Clive Davis, right? and there's an alleged relationship that those two share.
Yeah, and this goes into the homosexuality thing, which you know, I share your perspective. I could care less, and I'm surprised people to this day even care that people are gay or doing gay things. It's shocking that that can even be blackmail. But for me, my understanding, being into hip hop for all these years, is that there is a fair amount of homophobia still in that hip hop culture. So, I mean, they have phrases, no homo, pause. Well, I mean, these are all like...
Yeah, it's not just hip-hop culture, it's black culture. I mean, you see it with black comedians as well. Like, some of my favorite comedy podcasts have black comedians on them, and that's like a frequent, like, joke that they'll make. That's gay! Like, you know, and it's hilarious when it's well-timed. They don't mean it that way, but it's coming from, like, a real instinct of, like, I don't like gay stuff, which... I'm the same way. Like, don't put me in a room where people are getting naked in a bed. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to hang out at that party, right? So there's a lot of suspect stuff, but you were about to tell us about 3 a.m. Cologne.
Yeah, right? Let me. So I had a mem- because I used to have all these blog articles up, and I ended up taking them down because I got in some trouble. Long story. But anyways, I took them all down, but I have the archive, and I thought, man, I remember he had some cologne with Cassie, because Cassie is the artist that he hooked up with. She was the one that sort of broke this whole story, because she had dated him. Let me see here. Back in 2006. Yeah, so she dated him for 11 years, and she actually broke out with that single Me and You, and... Diddy or Puff Daddy, whatever his name was back then, he collabed with them and put her on the first her first studio album on Bad Boy Records in 2006. And then he dated her for 11 years, and she basically disappeared. Like, she never had a follow-up album, even though this song was a huge hit. She did a little bit of acting here and there, but she never got back into the entertainment industry. She just kind of stuck with Diddy as his girlfriend. And she's the one that started this whole investigation, because she, I think it was New York, they had some kind of temporary, I don't know, it's some legal thing where people could now bring up cases that were past the statute of limitations.
Right.
And she basically put a legal, I don't know, lawsuit or whatever against Diddy, alleging him of rape, sex trafficking, human trafficking, sexual battery, sexual assault. She said that he was very controlling, said that he tried to blow up Kid Cudi's car. He forced her to have sex with a bunch of sex workers while he filmed it and watched. He was physically injuring her, gave her head injuries, stomped her head. She went to the hospital, got some MRIs done, and he, being very controlling, took the MRIs, I guess. That this was all in the lawsuit. And then Diddy settled with Cassie out of court, allegedly for $100 million. But this is what started Diddy's legal issues, because then other people started coming out of the woodworks and suing him and things. But he had back in 2015, while I guess they were still dating, he had this cologne called 3 a.m. and there was a video for it. And the video, and this is all stuff I wrote about in 2015, which is what makes it interesting to me. I wrote, because I have copied and pasted some of the promo stuff for this video, and it says, "See what happens in Diddy's world at 3 a.m. And in the video, there's all this sort of occult stuff and vampire symbolism and things like that. And what's interesting, there was an interview on style.com, and this is what Diddy said about the cologne. He said, "I think if people hear about the video," let me back up. So he released a music video with Cassie in it, in tandem with the release of this cologne 3 a.m. Okay. He said, "I think if people hear about the video, they're going to hear that it's racy and provocative, but I also think they're going to hear people say it's beautiful. That whole interaction has nothing to do with sex as much as it has to do with love. My concept is that love is the new sexy. The concept for the video represents one of the things that 3 a.m. is for me. It's a very one-on-one time. It's a time to have fun and push the envelope a little bit. It's definitely an hour where you would find yourself with a young lady. Anything can happen at 3 a.m. And in the video, you see a fantasy that's in my head of what happened that night. And in the video, it shows some MK Ultra type stuff of him abusing Cassie in a way sexually. You could argue this is BDSM, but hearing Cassie's testimony or whatever you want to call her side of the story about what happened, I feel like it's abuse. There is some like vampire symbolism, and there's a there was some stag symbolism, like the male Nimrod hunter symbolism on the wall, because, you know, Diddy doesn't hunt. I'm sure he didn't hunt an elk or whatever that is there. And then there were some symbols of like the moon, and it looked like a blood red moon, kind of with a reflective as above, so below kind of symbolism going on. But anyways, the point being is that he talks about, in right in the description, he talks about 3 a.m. is time to push the envelope and you could be with young ladies. And that's part of what the after Cassie's lawsuit, there was the there was a few women that sued P. Diddy. But then there was also Lil Rod, who was with Diddy for a couple years while he was a producer for his newer album called, I think it was called Love or something, because he tried to rebrand his name as Love. It's kind of confusing. But one of the allegations is that Diddy would bring about underage girls to these parties, and it just spirals out of control real quick, because then people are now re-looking at all these interviews of people like Usher, who was hanging out with Diddy when he was young. And Usher said when he was, I think, like 13, that he would go to Diddy's flavor parties, they called it, and he refused to talk about it. This was on Howard Stern. And then people like, there's videos of Diddy hanging out with Justin Bieber when he was a teenager and talking about how he's spending 48 hours with Diddy, and Diddy can't talk about what they're going to do, but he's going to give Justin Bieber this sports car when they're done. And it's like, whoa, what is going on here? And I mean, I'm curious to see where all of this goes, because I read through Lil Rod's court document, and he basically draws a lot of allegations. He in fact specifically says that Diddy was running an Epstein operation. He specifically says that he had a Ghislaine Maxwell type character, this Diddy's chief of staff. I think it was KK Christina Coram. I can look through my notes and make sure I'm saying this right, but let me look here. Cause yeah, he specifically calls out on one of the pages. Yeah. If I could find it on here, here we go. Defendant Christina Coram is the Ghislaine Maxwell to Sean Combs's Jeffrey Epstein. But so they call out specifically the operation, and they talk about the hidden cameras. They talk about underage girls. They talk about how Diddy would do a lot of homosexual things, including having Cuba Gooding Jr. come over to sexually harass / assault Lil Rod. Now, did any of this stuff happen? I don't know. He posts some photos. Like, there's a photo in the document of Cuba Gooding Jr. with his arm around Lil Rod at the studio. But I mean, that doesn't make it true that he was sexually, you know, grabbing his ass and all this stuff. But I don't have a reason to doubt Lil Rod either. But he basically, it's interesting because Lil Rod is alleging that there's a RICO situation going on, which means that everyone involved with Diddy's parties was able to financially profit off of these illegal activities, from running drugs to drugging people, very MK Ultra-esque, to sexually harassing, sexually assaulting, sex trafficking, human trafficking, and blackmail operations with hidden cameras. And it's interesting because one of the people, and because he calls out several people involved in the RICO allegation, and it's Diddy, one of Diddy's sons, Justin Dior Combs. I'm going to mess her name up. Ethiopia Harbottomran. She was an intern at LaFace, where Diddy started out, and she is the CEO of Motown Records. And then the big dog, Lucian Grange, that's Sir Lucian Grange. He is the CEO of Universal Music Group, and he has been for the last 14 years. And he is the most powerful person in the entire music business. That's not conjecture. That's the truth. If you look his name up, and many people say that this is the case because UMG owns a ton of music. That's why if people get on TikTok and they see a lot of videos don't have the music, it's because UMG and TikTok have disagreed on the musical rights for all of UMG's artists. It's like Taylor Swift and Drake. And I mean, it's every big name you could ever think of. So it's interesting because Lil Rod claims that Lucian Grange, he's seen him come over several times during parties, and that him and Diddy would walk into the bedroom and be gone for a long period of time. Lil Rod admits that he doesn't know what they were doing in there, but the idea, I think, is that he's saying that Lucian Grange knows about these activities, these illegal activities, and it could be, and this is me reading through the lines, between the lines, that maybe Lucian Grange knew there was blackmail tapes of people doing stuff, and that's how they get people to sign contracts for less amount. I don't know. I mean, take it what you will, but the homosexual aspect of it is interesting because he calls out, I mean, this is such a big thing. Lil Rod calls out a couple of major artists. He doesn't say their names, but he describes them, and it's very clearly Meek Mill, who's a rapper, and he claims that he was involved with a lot of stuff and having homosexual affairs with Diddy, as well as, I believe it's Chris Brown, which is interesting because Chris Brown just posted a diss track against Quavo from the Migos, and I thought, Chris Brown, of all people, should not be throwing stones. I mean, that guy's got enough dirt on him. I mean, I could make a diss track against Chris Brown. He doesn't, like I said, he doesn't say their names exactly, but he does describe them in a way that's like, it's clearly them.
Right. Well, and there was the rumor going around that there was a video that was audio of Meek Mill and P. Diddy behind a door at a party goer recorded, you know, without anyone's knowledge, and then shared it, you know, years later when the lawsuit was aired. So, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard that audio. I mean, I don't know if it's true or not. I do believe that something like that could happen, though. So, I mean, anyway, and it opened up a can of worms because then there's other people that claim, man, it's so much. Diddy and another singer named Aaron Hall were sexually abusing a woman and made a revenge adult film with all those cameras. I mean, I don't know. I have to think that a lot of these people being called out in this case are worried about this getting more publicity or it going to trial or something. I don't know. But I think that, I mean, if I was a betting man, I would guess that it's very possible that the ABCs could be involved with all of this. And maybe they already know. And maybe that's why, you know, they arrested Diddy's drug runner. And I think there was a video on TMZ of Diddy was right there when they arrested him. And I thought, well, I mean, it just seems odd that they got this guy who's Diddy's drug guy. And there's all these cases against Diddy. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the law about how this affects him and his operations. But it is interesting because he's posting videos like everything's fine. And clearly it's not fine.
Yeah. Yeah, everything going on with Diddy is suspicious. And you mentioned briefly that some of the rooms were had cameras, but it's my understanding the whole house has cameras in it. Like, it's entirely surveilled from top to bottom.
Yeah, and that's, that's what I just watched. What was it on? I watched the Jared Fogle, the Subway guy. I watched the documentary about him, and he had a foundation called like the Jared Foundation or something. And the guy running the Jared Foundation, he had a similar operation in his home. I mean, it's terrible, but he was filming his stepdaughters in their bedrooms and the shower. And then the documentary doesn't go into detail enough for me because I'm like, well, what was he doing with those? Was he literally just handing them over to Jared, or was he selling them online, or what? And that's what bugs me about a lot of these cases, is that even the Sandusky case, which I know I've had Mark Clare, every time I bring up Sandusky, Mark Clare's like, you gotta, there's this whole thing that claims that he's, I don't know if he's innocent or whatever. I haven't listened to it, but apparently the case is not what it seems. But regardless, a lot of times when they, you know, with Epstein, Sandusky, Jared Fogle's buddy there, they arrest him and then they're just kind of like, okay, we got him, it's all over. And I think, no, like, who was the people these folks were in arrangements with?
Right.
Like,
right.
What's Diddy doing with all these videos? He's not, I don't think he's just doing it for his own pleasures. I think he's involved in a ring of folks. Like, what was that Nick Cage movie, 8mm? Wasn't that the plot of that? Wasn't he,
right?
This guy was filming the stuff at the behest of some group of shadowy folks, you know? And I think, to be fair, I think the example here is with Diddy's drug runner. I keep calling him his drug runner. I don't know his name. There was this guy that he was, I think a lot of prolific, famous, rich folks, they have an entourage, and one of the people on that entourage is the one that's holding the illegal drugs or the weapons or whatever, so that if they get pulled over, that's the person that gets arrested. That's what happened to Shine when Diddy and J-Lo were in that New York club. Diddy and some guy get into an altercation. The guy gets shot in the head, and lo and behold, Shine does 10 years in prison, and Diddy, totally fine. No problems whatsoever. Like, that's how these guys operate. They're not stupid. They know how to sort of skirt the law. And so that's why Diddy had, allegedly, that's why Diddy had this guy, you know, holding his drugs and getting his drugs for him, is so that he wouldn't get in trouble. And I think that's the same thing that happens with these people procuring these videos, is they're the ones that take the fall, and all the people who were the customers just kind of go about their day. And you got to wonder if these aren't the more rich, more powerful folks, right? You know, for people like us, we think Diddy's this very wealthy guy. We're like, oh man, this guy's got it made. But he ain't nothing. There's people above him that look down upon him and are like, okay, we'll just pay. He's the drug dealer guy, you know?
Right.
That's where they get these freaky tapes and things.
Well, and even the entire rap music industry has moved towards this kind of exploitative structure where people like P. Diddy, you know, use mediocre talent as opposed to naturally talented artists because they can augment their popularity artificially with, you know, the production, with the, you know, social media, with all these other things that, you know, the flair, the tinsel around it. And it does seem like, you know, P. Diddy, Jay-Z, there's like an upper echelon of rappers that are kind of, you know, immune from a lot of the consequences that you see, you know, the majority of the rappers that are popular, you know, occasionally will get arrested, occasionally will be in, you know, lethal encounters, you know. It's not rare that you have a rapper who gets shot and killed and, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's like with these guys, it's almost like they've become kind of management status in a way. And yeah, they have all these people around them who have become disposable and usable. You know, it's like you get this blackmail on them. We can use them, and the money is what's going up the chain, right? Like P. Diddy, he's profiting off of it, but there's people above him who are profiting off of it even more, you know, tenfold, right? So
yeah.
I think
the blackmail operation is really interesting, because a lot of people say that Epstein, which, you know, Epstein's a massive subject that I've never formally deep dive into terribly deep because it's just so much going on there. But one of the takeaways of what I've, the way I understand it to be, is that there are some very comfortable links between intelligence agencies overseas, and I'm not going to say which one. I don't want to get you band or something. And, you know, and Ghislaine Maxwell's father, right? And Epstein. And the argument is that Epstein would get blackmail on very high profile people and provide that over to these agencies. And now these agencies can control the highest levels of American government and politics and all this stuff. And I believe that Diddy could be an arm of that operation that is focused more on the entertainment industry.
Right.
Yeah. And that is an interesting point you bring up, because Jay-Z, you know, I like Jay-Z, the 90s Jay-Z. I really liked his music. And then after that, I'm not the biggest fan, but he was plugged into all of these, kind of like Diddy. He was always kind of right there with all the big moments in hip hop history, with the murder of Big and Tupac. Jay-Z, he infamously stabbed somebody, went to trial and got off for it. And there was a video of him wearing a big puffy coat, and those coats then sell out. I mean, that just goes to show, it's like there is a power, a financial power behind a lot of these violent artists and things like this. And Jay-Z, I think he is probably the next, if they can get Diddy, if he doesn't end up, you know, going the route of Epstein, I think Jay-Z is the next one that would be in the crosshairs. And I don't know the purpose. I don't know what the higher purpose of this is. Is it that these guys just finally got caught and the gig's up now, or did people like Diddy do something to piss off the people above them? I don't know. But
I wonder if it's not that they're setting the stage for the next wave, and their time is up. You've played your role, and now we're going to, you know, dispose of you so that people don't trust this music anymore, and they'll be welcoming the next, you know, bread and circus that we throw in front of them, right? And
it could be.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor, The Hit Kit, the number one way to get lit. Yes, The Hit Kit's great. I just got another Hit Kit in the mail. This one is totally different than the previous models. Instead of the wood finish, it's got like more of a matte sort of smooth finish with a multicolored design. This one's like a Southwest kind of Yantra kind of pattern, Sri Yantra pattern, I believe it's called in the East. But in the West, well, we just call this Indian knickknack. Anyways, get yourself a Hit Kit if you're out roaming on the range and you want to smoke up a doobie or a cigar or whatever. Put it in a Hit Kit. You'll never lose your ladder again. And of course, our other sponsor, Oregonite. That's Oregonite from the great state of Oregon. Not a tongue twister. I'm not mentally deficient. No, that's Oregonite. That's right. Oregonite. Get yourself a piece of Oregonite. Maybe you're mentally deficient, and Oregonite can help reestablish your crown chakra and your third eye chakra and your throat chakra. Get all of them nice and healthily aligned. Go and check out Oregon.ite on Instagram. Use the promo code MFTIC. You save 10% off and you help kick a little bit back to me with that affiliate code. And use the promo code CRAZY at checkout when you're picking up the Hit Kit. That's MFTIC for the Oregonite, CRAZY for the Hit Kit. And I'm crazy for my Hit Kit, but let's take another small break with our dynamic ads brought to you by the cookies and the little trackers in your phone that are trying to predict what you might want to buy. And then we'll be right back to this great conversation with Isaac Weishaupt right after that.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Well, and I want to ask you on that note, like, how much of this occult symbolism was in our face? Like, you know, there's been kind of some talk about one music video in particular that seems to allude to like an Epstein Island kind of situation. That might have been a Jay-Z song and not directly P. Diddy involved in it, but I think there's another one where it's like they're on an island and it kind of looks like Epstein Island, right? So aside from the trafficking kind of nods that may be there, were there any other, besides the 3 a.m. cologne ad, any other kind of occult tinges to what P. Diddy would present, how he would present himself?
I think so. That video, I think it was called Fiesta. It was Jay-Z and R. Kelly, of all people, R. Kelly.
Right.
Yeah, that was the video that people say was filmed on Epstein Island. I recall looking into that when that was going around online, but this is before the Diddy lawsuits, and I thought that had been kind of disproven, but I could be wrong on that. And then what was the other one you mentioned? I'm trying to think. And either way, the idea here is, oh, there was the Notorious B.I.G. video with Puff Daddy hypnotized. It shows them kind of on the run from the from the federales and things.
Yep.
And I think that we could be looking at occult symbolism in the idea that these folks are showing us what's going on in real life, you know, hidden in plain sight. Or it could be a bit of synchro mysticism where, you know, sometimes stuff gets posted and it goes out into the universe and it gets mass consumed by folks. And then I believe that it can manifest into reality. That was kind of the idea I propositioned in my, I wrote two alien books in 2020 called Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. And that was kind of the idea I floated in that, where if you can, and this gets kind of woo-woo, it gets into the realm of quantum physics, which supports this, and I would argue spirituality and religion could support this, but the idea that when you focus on a certain, we'll call it a frequency, that frequency will show back up in your life. And if for instance with the UFOs, it would be, if you're obsessed with the UFOs, then now you're starting to see them. That's kind of what Stephen Greer's, what do you call it? He had an app. C-SETI. I paid for. I bought the app.
CE5 or
CE5. Yeah. It's meditating and sort of focusing your energies on UFOs. And according to him, it works. And I do believe that. I think that whatever, I do think our reality is malleable in a way, and it's very subjective in terms of how our mind works. You know, I've read Dr. Joe Dispenza's books on quantum physics, and I find it really interesting because our minds are kind of like computers, and we do filter out. I don't know what the numbers are. It's not something I talk about often, but our minds will, or our eyeballs, our senses pull in all this data, and the mind will, it's an efficient machine. It'll look for patterns that it knows and reuse that to reinforce a concept of something that we're seeing. And the rest of it, it kind of filters out. So it's something like 95% of reality that our senses take in, we filter right out. We just don't see it because our brains are trying to like be computers and be efficient. An example of this which I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard this explained on a documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know. It's a quantum physics documentary. And they say that when Christopher Columbus and his ships came across the ocean, the Native Americans were on the coast and they could, the ships were right there, but they couldn't see it because they had no concept in their mind of what a ship was. So if that was true, then that's kind of what the UFO phenomenon represents, is they show this stuff to us to sort of plant the idea in the mind, and then the mind can be programmed to accept and see these things in reality. So when we see symbolism in music videos, in rap videos and things like this, it could be chicken or the egg. It could be synchro mysticism in the sense that they show us these things and then they manifest into reality later on, or it could be that these are the activities they're really doing and they're just symbolically showing us a bit of what do you call it, revelation of the method, perhaps. But signs, symbols, synchronicities, all those things I think are tied together. And you do see it in a lot of hip hop. There was I guess one example would be Young Thug, who ironically is in he's in a court case of his own right now, right? That goes further about what you were saying about the how a lot of these guys do get sort of caught up in real life and all these things. He had a music video of him, man. It's been a while since I've talked about this. It's probably been 8 years. There was allegations that, so Lil Wayne was on a tour bus and it got shot up, and there was allegation that it was Lil Thug or Young Thug that did it. And the guy who actually did the shooting or took the fall for the shooting was in a Young Thug video holding an assault rifle, but this was released before the tour bus shooting. So it's almost like it predictably programmed that into reality in a way. That's kind of a very rudimentary example, yeah. But this kind of stuff does happen. Yeah. Like one last one, you know, growing up in the 90s, it was so bizarre that, you know, Tupac, his posthumous album Machiavelli, which is about faking one's own death, he had this whole album talking about his death. Same with Big. He had his double album, Life After Death, the same thing. I remember I had those albums, and I remember thinking, well, that's really weird. But it didn't go further than that, besides like, man, how do these guys know they were gonna die? I mean, and now that I'm in my 40s, I look back and think, why would you think you're gonna die? You're in your 20s. You're like, these guys were young. Anyway, the world is weird, man.
Oh, it's really dark and it's very self-destructive. And, you know, going back to that, like, who's, you know, benefiting from this system, it's not the rappers, it's not even these mid-level guys. It's the people who are way above that, who, you know, I know this isn't either of our expertises, but, you know, the whole prison system and how it's pipelined so many people, not just black people, all different walks of life. Anybody who's unfortunate enough to have been raised in a circumstance like, you know, poverty and not had the opportunity to get out of it. I mean, it's a terrible thing. And there's millions of people that are in that state just alone in this country, you know, not to mention around the world. And I think rap music has a way of exploiting that urge to, you know, sort of fight back against this unfairness, this unfair hand you've been dealt. But it goes about that in a way that totally escalates your violence, and it kind of, you know, gives your integrity of that feeling, you know, no power. You know, I think it's disempowering stuff, really, and it leads to more issues, and maybe that's purposeful. You know, I just had a conversation with someone about Francis Bacon and Shakespeare and how they kind of designed this new world that we live in, and you can see culture taking on this form in very specific ways with different subcultures. It's not just rap music. You look at, you know, certain types of, what do you call it, grunge music, and compare that to like hard drug use in areas where grunge music was popular. And there's a similar correlation there too, you know, and that's not in the black community, that's in the white community, right? So, you know, it's not just a rap issue. It's like a degeneracy, a degeneration of our culture. It's kind of becoming self-destructive, at least the pop version of it. I think you...
Yeah, and I've always said that, you know, entertainment is super influential, and the big lie is that it's not. Yeah. And with rap music, you know, I live in both of these worlds, right? Because I enjoy the like a lot of the gangster rap music. I, you know, and I blame this on 80s wrestling, because I've always been intrigued by the heels and the bad guys, and I like that sort of that super hyper alpha male sort of talk. Like I like 21 Savage a lot, because he's got some really good like witty put downs and you know, I mean, they're talking about killing people and making money and drugs and stuff, but like, so the reality is like this is not good content. This isn't healthy for people to consume, but I also support it in the sense that I'm like, yeah, but I listen to this stuff and I let it motivate me to do other things. It gets me motivated to go to the gym. It gets me motivated to hustle and like get back to work and try to like get some podcasting done or whatever. Right. So, I mean, you could alchemically flip the messages into whatever you want. You don't have to use it to sell drugs or, commit crimes. You can use it to do positive things in your life. And I've done that. Now, do I think that's the road most people take? Hell no, because this is a class warfare thing, right? This goes back to the foundations of America and our Ivy League schools. John Potash talked about this in his books about, I don't remember the title of the book, but he has his book and he talks about how the Russell family...
Drugs as Weapons Against Us, I think is the title.
Yep, it's a great book. And he talks about how the Illuminati bloodlines who started this country basically... did it off of the illegal drug activity of opium trade. And I mean, that's a fact. It goes back to, that's where Yale Skull and Bones comes from. And this ties into, was the person you were talking to about Francis Bacon, was it Robert from The Hidden Life is Best?
Yeah,
he's great. Robert. I got to get him on my show too. I just, you know how it goes, man. It's hard to get everything done. It's a fascinating subject. So much to learn about Francis Bacon and Shakespeare.
Well, it's funny you mentioned wrestling, because we did talk about Shakespeare and theater, and wrestling is hyper masculine theater, you know, as much as like, I mean, my generation, it was a little, you know, I was part of like the John Cena era of wrestling. Like that's when I signed on, you know, as like kind of a vague wrestling fan. I never got too far into it because UFC was right out around that same time, so it kind of stole a lot of the thunder, and me and my friends got into like MMA and all that and started beating the shit out of each other. Probably was just as much of a bad influence as rap was on other communities.
Well, MMA is a good example. You could use those skills to protect people you love, or you could use those skills to bully people. I mean, anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I'm with you. And, you know, we didn't bully anyone but each other. But it definitely had a funny influence. And yeah, I think with wrestling in particular, you have a point there about how like it created this like bad guy, good guy worldview. And rap just played right into that, where they became the bad guys, you know, and like everybody wanted to be the bad guy because the bad guy's cool. The bad guy throws the coolest parties. He dresses really nice. He has the cool car, right? So yeah,
there's a song called Ric Flair Drip Offset and Egg 21 or something. Exactly. The same thing. It's talking about Ric Flair, who's like the greatest heel of all time.
Right. Wow. Well, man, I know we just kind of blasted through a lot of information, but you, like you said, have your work cut out for you with this P. Diddy stuff. There's a lot to cover, and I'm sure you're going to be covering it if you haven't already. Obviously, you're just on the Higher Side Chats. You guys got into a bunch of details there. There was this, real quick, before we wrap up, I want to ask you, Candy Michelle Johnson, right? Did you get a chance to read any of her work? Or, because I know now it's all super expensive and like pretty much out of print. But did you get a chance to like purchase those back in the day when you did come across it? Like, did you actually look at the original material?
No, I didn't. You know, it was a trending topic in 2020 in the conspiracy world that she wrote a book called, I think it was called Adrenochrome Nights with Diddy or something.
Right.
And you know how it is. People will send you messages. Hey, you got to check this out. And if I get enough of those messages, I'll be like, okay, let me look into this. And I looked into it. And at the time, I dismissed it because I thought, because when you look at it, it's self-published ebooks, and they're very amateur looking. You know, anyone can publish a book, an ebook. So I just because there's a book out there doesn't make it a real factual, right? And I looked at it and I kind of dismissed it because I thought I read through the preview of it and it was only a few pages and it just seemed kind of corny. I didn't think much of it. And, you know, bad conspiracy theorist, you know, I should have dug deeper, but then cause at the time it was a QAnon kind of environment we were living in. And there was people throwing crazy stuff about how, they're going to execute Oprah Winfrey in the town square with the 12 days of darkness. And it was just a crazy time. And I was just like, dude, there's so much disinformation going around. And, but yeah, Candy Michelle Johnson is an interesting character because she claimed she worked as a writer for Diddy in 2016. And if you dig around online, you can find all sorts of posts she's made and different little ebooks she wrote, which, like you said, some of them are as low as I think like $50. Some of them are $250,000. I don't know. But this stuff was written back before any of this Diddy stuff was public information. And she makes claims about sex trafficking with a guy who was related to the guy running Soul Town Records. But the Adrenochrome story is supposedly about Diddy. And I think that one's maybe $20,000. I don't remember. I couldn't tell you, but I do know that she wrote a lot of content about it. If you go to her, if you could navigate through and find her webpage where she offers up these ebooks, and it's like, I mean, it's got to be 100 ebooks that she's got on there, and some of them repeat, and it's the same images. Be careful if you do this though, because the one has, I think it's called Hot Nights with Cassie, and I clicked on it, and when you click on it, it shows you a little, some of them you can download free previews of. And the one, I mean, it's a full on nude photo of Cassie spread eagle. I mean, there's nothing left to the imagination. And I thought, that's wild that this is just out on the internet. I don't know where that picture came from. It sure looks like her. But as we know, Diddy was making her do all these provocative things on film. So that makes me wonder if she had access to Diddy stuff. Maybe right. She really was hanging out with Diddy. I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Greg found her, should I say all this? I think Greg's going to try to, he wants to contact her and interview her is what I know. Wow. I don't know if he's going to pull that off.
Cool.
Anyway. Yeah.
Cool. Well, hey, good to know. Thanks for sharing. Yeah, no, it's interesting with that one person in particular. You know, she also has connections to Chrissy Teigen. And
that's right. Yes.
There was that story that came out, what, a couple years ago about Teigen making some weird comments on her Twitter and seemed like some kind of allusion to child sacrifice or even like cannibalism or something like that. It was really disturbing stuff. So, but lots to parse through, Isaac. It's always a treat to have you here, man. I know we don't have that much time, so we'll let you go. Of course, Pop. Sorry, I'm so used to your old title of the show. I don't want to say it, but Occult Symbolism and Popular Culture. But I was about to say the old title of the show.
I did a slight rebrand because the term conspiracy got so red hot, right? And I had been harassed in every which way possible and kicked off of all these platforms, and I thought I'd been kicked off of everything, and I thought, you know, I didn't want to be a podcaster. I was writing, I was doing all kinds of stuff and blogging, and then they shut every door on me. They canceled my YouTube channel, and podcasting was the last avenue. And I thought, okay, well, I'll just go, because I've been podcasting since 2014, but podcasting was the last avenue. And I thought, well, if they shut this, then I'm done. I guess I just won't talk about this stuff ever again. And the podcast kind of blew up. And that was a preventative measure I took that I thought, man, I don't want this last door to shut on me so soon, because things were hot in 2020. So
that ain't going to happen. Not if we could help it. I think, no, you're a pillar in this community, Isaac. And I think the slight shift in branding was appropriate. And I don't think anyone holds that against you. But IlluminatiWatcher.com is the main hub where you can find the pod and everything else you have going on, your books. And yeah, thank you so much, man. It's always great to have you. I look forward to the next one. And
I got one more thing to plug. June 22nd, I'm going to be in Las Vegas doing a lecture and a meet and greet. It's going to be me, Jay Dyer, Jamie Hanshaw, and the actor Jamie Kennedy. And it's a 6 hours of entertainment and a meet and greet with all of us. And I want people to come out and show up. Because this is my first time doing a public lecture and meet and greet, very possibly my last. I'm much more of an introvert than I put on. You know, I put on a real entertainer's face when I do podcasting, right. But I'm exhausted with it because I am very much an introvert. I don't want to talk to nobody. It's not because I don't like people. It's that, like, I get exhausted. If people ever wanted to do this, like, this is the time. Come to Las Vegas, June 22nd. You can find the tickets on Eventbrite. Or go to I'll post. I got a link in my Instagram bio, at Isaac Weishaupt. Jay Dyer's been pimping it. I've been pimping it.
I'll find the link. I'll share it in the description.
I'll send it over to you, man. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Cool. Yeah, please, folks, go and support Isaac. Go meet him in June on the 22nd in Las Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Right on. Well, all right. Well, with that, folks, take it easy, and we'll see you next time. Immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. Another fantastic episode with Isaac Weishaupt, and he was right off the top of the bat there. He has been on the show twice before, so go and check out those episodes if you haven't before. One of them was back before we even were in the triple digits, one of the early days when I had some amazing guests, people that went on to be super famous, some people who are legacy Hollywood famous, other people who are just cool people that I'm still friends with, other people that are just unique, interesting guests, and, you know, some people that we won't have on the podcast ever again, unfortunately. Tons of interesting episodes, and Isaac Weishaupt, like he said, has been on the show twice before, so go and check those out. Also, check out our Patreon back catalog, where you get bonus content and extensions to pretty much every episode. This episode ran a little shorter than usual because Isaac is a busy guy. He's also, you know, he's a top shelf podcaster, okay? His time is extremely valuable. So one day when we're getting the more numbers on the show, when we're getting more than, we're doing pretty good. You know, I think 10,000 downloads per episode plus, that's pretty good. But we could do better. So who knows? Maybe that'll change. Maybe one day Isaac Weishaupt will dedicate 2 hours to be on the show. Let him know that you'd like to see him for a full episode. If you were a fan of this show and you're a fan of his, he's got a fantastic show, Occult Symbolism and Popular Culture. I have no trouble remembering it now for some reason. Isaac's a great dude. I really enjoy talking to him. He covers a realm that so many people take a whack at, you know? I mean, it's really common to see memes and stuff about, you know, this world that Isaac kind of specializes in now. The title of his podcast sums it up, Occult Symbolism in Popular Culture, right? It makes sense. But he does it so much better than anyone else I've seen. You know, don't get offended out there if you do the same thing. But yeah, no, I just when I'm thinking about, oh, what's this, you know, weird thing, you know, a lot of times, you know, I don't watch TV, so, but if I ever do and I see something weird, there's a good chance Isaac has covered it. And I did want to have him on the show to talk about Twin Peaks because he's been covering that television show, which I saw a couple years ago, back way before the podcast started. I watched the entire series, what was out back then, and I don't think I saw the third season ever. So I might revisit that and have him back on the show for a fourth conversation all about Twin Peaks. So if you want to see that, let me know. Sign up on Patreon or Substack. That's the best way to get in touch with me. You can leave me a comment on any of the posts or send me a direct message through there. Send me a one-time donation and get a shout-out. I got to give another couple of shout-outs. Oh, got to turn my notifications off. Sorry about that. Yeah, we got a couple of donations coming in recently. Big shout-out to Branimir. Thank you for the five bill, the euro. And then another shout-out to Brent, who's just the man. He's just coming in clutch. You know, each episode he's getting a shout-out if he keeps this up. So shout-out to you, Brent, keeping the gas flowing over here. I think the prices went up. I mean, I used to get 3 gallons for $10. Now I'm only getting like 2.5. So we'll see. But appreciate that, Brent. And, yeah, we're smoking some gas over here, too. I hope you guys like the rap intro with the Diddy clips, a couple of different clips that I found, multiple different people making allegations, telling their experiences, and even Diddy himself saying some pretty strange and questionable things. And there was so much more that I recorded that I couldn't put in that short 5-minute intro. I tried to keep it under 5 minutes. I didn't want it to sound like... you know, the whole episode is just going to be a clip montage, but I hope you liked it. And if you did, you'll get more cool montage clips like that moving forward. I do like the types of intros I do already, but it's nice to take a break and switch it up every now and then. And this is a Friday episode, so you're getting a bonus as we come to the end of this April 2024. And all of the Diddy stuff is all over the social media. The social media, it's all over it. It's all over it. And yeah, that song that I used, one of them was an instrumental. Shout out to the guy who put those free instrumentals out there. Let me give him a shout out. It is Fat Cat Beats on YouTube. Shout out to Fat Cat Beats with the free beats. I love it. Fat Cat Beats. You might hear some more Fat Cat Beats moving forward. And then there was another song that I used, and I want to just get the name of it so I don't... Yeah, so it was a remix by Galil HD, produced by Galil HD. And I think it was on a channel called Premium Hip Hop, and it's... mashup with Tupac and 50 Cent. I don't think 50 Cent was alive when Tupac, or I don't think Tupac was alive when 50 Cent began his career. Actually, they might have gotten shot around the same time. But anyways, I think Tupac got shot earlier. But 50 Cent, you know, he was a big name for a little bit with his mixtape, and then he got shot, and then he came back, and that's when he got famous. So Tupac and 50 Cent, they definitely didn't do that song together, if you were wondering. That was a hood remix. But I loved it. I think that's an appropriate song for an episode about P. Diddy. And 50 Cent has been a vocal advocate for letting everybody know what's going on with P. Diddy. And, you know, all the people coming out, he is advocating for them, it seems, on his social media. by promoting all of the rumors and all of the allegations, which I think when you review the history of strange quotes, strange statements made by P. Diddy and strange videos that you can find of him on the internet, I mean, yeah, some of it's really disturbing, like I was saying before. But anyways, that's enough for this intro. Sign up on Patreon or Substack to hear more from me. I try to do a little bit more for the outros in the Patreon. And you don't hear any ads. It's completely ad-free, uninterrupted, just the good stuff. So sign up there and support the show. Help us get to 300 paid subscribers on Patreon so we could start doing some in-the-field research, checking out where these portals are, finding these stone structures, and all the other strange stuff going on in this esoteric America. Trademark, and we're out of here. Thank you so much, folks. Big shout out to our guest Isaac. Support him. Although I get a funny feeling that maybe some of you are here just for Isaac, so in that case, stick around. I think you'll like my show. Give it a listen. Go check out those old interviews of with Isaac. And until next time, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
MFTIC. It's all a sudden. Yeah. It's all a sudden. Broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused, like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki. Stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception, tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it, and the system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling to the library of the Vatican on a sacred journey. I embark with the squad, forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My getaway, I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, rob him for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-35s. Gotta know the facts, never hold back, cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. I dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.